You know, I tend to be really fast when I do projects because, you know, that's the name of the game. Yeah. We're flipping. You got to do it fast because you're paying hard money, carrying costs. You know, I made some mistakes that, you know, cost me close to $1 million. And so realizing just slowing down, take your time. I think that was something I learned.
Wondering what it takes to succeed in business? Welcome to the Hustle Podcast, where we share genuine stories of success and failure to guide you on your journey to achieving your goals. All right. So we're back with the Hustle Podcast. And I have a really special guest. We have done business together. We've been in networks together, obviously known each other throughout our community, but Ben Goodpasture. A lot of you guys may know Ben in regards to just his social media, just talking about investments, just the good that you've done in our community with flips and kind of just sharing your growth in that journey. And so I really wanted to bring you in, kind of share you from a perspective of how to start in investing. There's so many different ways. There's ways to do it. And then also really touch point where you are right now with Cave Springs up in Dunsmuir, which I think is probably a new wheelhouse for you, a little bit probably outside of your comfort zone from what you were used to doing. So maybe start a little bit back with your background of how you got into your first investment, kind of the leg up of that. And, you know, we can kind of roll from there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Bear team. You guys are amazing. And I always look at you guys as like the leaders of just social media and creative content creation. So I'm always like, yes. But yeah, real estate, I got it started really in 2015. And that was right after I got married. So my wife and I bought a house and we house hacked. And for those that don't know what that is, it's basically just a primary house and an investment property where we rented out the basement, which was a little one bedroom studio, and we lived in it. And then we rented the upstairs and we fully renovated it, furnished it, and put it on Airbnb. And it was amazing. That covered our mortgage and we lived free. And that's really how we got started. It was just like, okay, let's try this out. No one's doing it. It wasn't like house hacking was a thing back then. But I just had this idea like, you know, you can live in like a duplex or a two unit place and live in one and rent the other. And I'm like, that just makes sense. And then when you want to move to your next one, now you have a duplex that's going to cash flow really well. So yeah, that was how we got started.
Kind of the start of it. Yeah. And for those who are kind of like, you know, I think house hacking is now a lot more common. People are trying to find it. It's, I would say right now, more the challenge is finding that good opportunity that makes sense, that pencils out and whatnot. And we can kind of get a little bit further into it. Would you say as you transitioned into your investments, has it seems like it's been a mixture of flipping to holding to rentals. What have you kind of found like your best lane of, I guess, the hamster wheel of how you keep up with all your investments, but also keep the pendulum kind of moving forward so that at the end of the day, you're adding more to your portfolio?
Yeah, I think it's always been about the deal, finding what, you know, whatever deal it was. You know, we started with the house hacking and then we slowly started kind of doing that live and flip method where every couple of years you buy another one and then you turn the last one into a rental. And then it wasn't until I discovered hard money that things started to accelerate. This is when I started like really flipping properties and started really understanding more like creative finance. And And so it started out with, you know, single family house flips. And then I was like, oh, I just kept wanting to challenge myself and do like really hard things. So we started buying multifamilies and then we learned about the Burr method. And so I think once I started, you know, flipping small apartments, I was like, this is great. And then we bought a 16 unit apartment building. And honestly, that's been our probably one of our best investments that, you know, after a year of renovating all 16 units, now it's like I spend maybe 2 minutes on it a month, you know, and it's just so passive. And you have long-term tenants. We have a property manager that takes care of it. And so I would love more of those. So that would be probably my like sweet spot. I would love to have, you know, more mid-size apartments, just
more doors.
Yeah, more doors. And it just, you know, well, the ones that make sense right now, it's been challenging with interest rates. So that's been one reason why I've chosen to sell stuff, because it makes more sense to make 50 to 100 grand on a sell versus cash flow, like $500 to $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it always depends on the market rates, all that stuff kind of will dictate if you sell or keep
right. it. Right. For you now kind of going through a couple of series of flipping, investing and whatnot, and it sounds like based on the market, it kind of dictates whether you think it's a good deal or not. Yeah. What's kind of like your motto? Like some people are like, hey, if I don't cash flow X, I don't think it's a good deal, so I'm not going to buy it. Or are you kind of like, hey, as long as my mortgage is covered, like where do you find that, that lane that you kind of can quickly look and analyze a deal and say good or not? Like what's your filter? Yeah.
Oh man, there's quite a few things. I think location is a big thing. Always looking at location, 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 location. Yeah. I think that's one. I think, am I drawn to that property? Is there something unique about it that is interesting? I always want to add value. So mm-hmm. whatever it is, if it's deferred maintenance, low rents, I'm always trying to find a deal. Like I don't want to buy a retail property, because then you're not forcing that appreciation. That's where your money is really made, mm-hmm. buying stuff that's just no one else wants to buy. Like those mm-hmm. are the properties that have always been the most successful ones. Another metric that I think is really cool, I've been thinking about a lot today, because we have a triplex that we're thinking about flipping, and you know, I was doing the numbers and I was like, you know what, I might keep it because the cash flow would be greater in 10 years, 10 years of cash flow would be greater than me selling it now. So mm-hmm. for example, if we cash flow $18,000 a year, that's $180,000 of 10 years of cash flow. Well, I could probably only sell it now for maybe $100,000 profit. Mm-hmm. So the cash flow is better to keep it. So I'm like, oh, I might keep this property if we don't find the right buyer. So
yeah. And for kind of, because I think I'll ask this and, you know, obviously we have to be careful with how tenant laws are. Some yeah. people skip over good deals or what would perceive as a good deal because the tenants in it are, unfortunately for the person that held that, I mean, straight up, the tenant rent is not up to market value. And it's a challenge to like then see the, you know, that as a good investment. So how do you navigate properties where tenants are obviously not up to good market value? Like, is it just that you improve the property and you kind of like, you know, utilize that? Like, how do you see that? Because those are really honestly where the yeah. good deals are, yeah. you know?
No, I'm definitely the person to ask because I've yeah. got a lot of experience in this area. I mean, the main thing is, I think, is being generous with them. I always do. Well, one, I'll go back. I think those are areas of opportunity because mm-hmm. most people are fearful. They're like, they think evictions, they think court, they think a lot of money. And that's all true. Like those scenarios can happen. And I've been in scenarios like that where I've had to evict people and it's awful. Mm-hmm. I've had threats. I've had all kinds of crazy stuff, but, I don't stay away from those. I've done a lot of cash for keys and I try to be super generous. So for example, I'm doing a deal now where I normally do something where I offer like a really great incentive up front. So, hey, if you move out in 30 days, I'll give you $5,000. Mm-hmm. Like that could almost cover maybe 5 months of rent for somebody.
Right.
So being really generous and really aggressive has always worked well for me, just offering a really great cash for keys. And then most people take it. And if they don't, then, you know, we try to find some kind of win-win to work with the tenant.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think those are like, you know, you'll go on it and for the rental value that you ask for, I think it's like and similar to ours. I mean, we do, you know, new construction in-law units, you know, we do furnished. We tend to set maybe a rental market that's a little bit higher than what the perceived consumer thinks is a mm-hmm. fair market value. But I'm like, after, you know, return of investment, improvements on the property management, like, I don't think some people wrap their mind around like actually the cost carried because it's almost like, yeah, I would love to rent this out for you for $1,200, but that's just not realistic for mortgage, taxes, and insurance. And so I think, like you said, if you can find the way for the cash to keys or find a creative way to improve it, it's like those are most of the properties that people will just skip over because they're like, ah, it doesn't cash flow and I don't have time to manage either, you know, moving the tenant to somewhere else or finding the opportunity in it. So from investing and kind of doing the apartments and everything, what would you say was your do you, I feel like some people will do like flips to kind of, you know, get the extra cash to be able to purchase the properties. You know, with all kind of selling it and everything like that, are you a big believer in a 1031 exchange, or how do you defer taxes to kind of offset all the profit that you're making in the eyes of the government?
Yeah, that's a big thing. So I sold 4 properties last year that were properties that I wasn't planning on selling. Mm-hmm. And I just needed cash for Cave Springs, which we'll talk about that. That's a resort that I own. And so I got a pretty big tax bill this year, and I was like, shoot, this is the biggest tax bill I've ever had. And then it was really cool. It was such a like blessing. A friend of mine connected me with his dad who does, cost segregation studies. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing one of those right now for one of my properties, and it's literally going to wipe out almost $100,000 tax bill that I have this year. So I'm paying maybe $7,000 to do this cost seg study, which is basically accelerated depreciation. And mm-hmm. So a lot of CPAs don't even know this because it's such a like specialized niche. So you have this accelerated depreciation, and then you also have like bonus depreciation that most CPAs don't know about. So just one property doing this study, it cost me $7,000, but I'm saving $100,000 on taxes this mm-hmm. year. And there's probably gonna be some left over to where I don't have to pay taxes next year either.
Yeah. We actually talked with a guy in our ecosystem, and he does that. He just did one on commercial building. He said it's kind of almost like the hamster wheel. Like once you do it on that property and you depreciate it upfront, then you almost have to like, if the goal is to like keep doing this to tax defer, it's not like you're cheating the system at all. It's just a very strategic, more, build your portfolio faster. It kind of almost forces you because it then pushes that depreciation to the next property, and then you can do it on the next one. But yeah, he mentioned the same thing. He's like, most people, one, don't want to do it. It's too risky because they're not future planning the next purchase.
Yeah.
And then they kind of get, you know, depreciate in this year, and then next year you don't have anything else to depreciate. So it's always future thinking, but
yeah. And with that, you want to talk to a,
yeah, we're not CPA, like advisors.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you want to talk to someone even before you buy the property, because it can be strategic. There's all these things of like, if you tear out cabinets and stuff, or like different appliances or roof, like you can get a write off for the stuff you take out. And It's a lot that people just don't know about. And when you start to invest more and more, you think about taxes, and like 1031, I think, is a great strategy. I haven't used it yet because most of the stuff I've held on to. And, but if it's like a flip, you know, I'm just cashing out because I want money. So it's this combination of like, okay, how's my ecosystem doing? Do I need more cash? Have reserves? Mm-hmm. You know, is this a great property to hold? It all depends on the numbers. And I think that's a big thing in real estate, is let the numbers do the talking versus mm-hmm. like your emotions.
Yeah. And with your investments and everything, I think we touched on it a little bit more as an investment, but for rentals, what do you have like a number in mind, like of like return on investment each month? Like, does the property have to cash flow $500 or $1,000 in order for it to make sense? Like, what's your kind of like threshold for that?
I think that changes, you know, like I remember, you know, when I first started, it was like, man,
we'll take a dollar.
Yeah. It's like, if, you know, and when you're Airbnb and stuff or doing 30 night rentals, you know, you're getting a really great return. So I'm getting like, you know, over $1,000 a door. And I'm like, this is great. And then as like rates change, you know, things come down. So I don't know if I have like a number. I think a minimum of 500 a unit would be pretty ideal. Mm-hmm. It all depends. Like if it was, you know, if I was buying something in Southern California that, you know, I want to use, you know, maybe it wouldn't be that important to me to have a certain like cash flow. It might be more of a appreciation play or a tax play. So
yeah, like what's the goal there?
Yeah. I think knowing the goal, but I do think having some type of cash flow is so wise to cover your repairs and maintenance and all your expenses.
Yeah. And obviously you've had a lot of different fields that you've done Airbnbs, long-term flips, apartments mm-hmm. and all that. What would you say is your main lane? It sounds like apartments have kind of been really more of like your bread and butter more recently, because it's more doors, just more certainty. Like if one leaves, you still have 15 other people still there. Are you still really in the Airbnb world at all, or?
Not as much. Yeah. I had probably 12 to 15 Airbnb is going on one time in the whole like 2021 when it was just amazing. And then, and then it just got so saturated where, mm-hmm. you know, there was one, I was just like losing money every month, and it was a shocker because I such a great property. I'm like, how is this happening? So, you know, I think the apartments, I love them because of how they serve our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like it's just
simple.
It's simple. It's not much of my time. I do love design. I do like creating. And so like single family flips are fun when you find something really like cool or high end, and those are great. I love that. I like doing remodels. I do love hospitality. I'm in that now, obviously more with Cave Springs. So I think I do enjoy the hospitality and the whole branding and creating an experience for someone. Mm-hmm. That's just fun. Like I would enjoy to keep doing that, I think.
Yeah. And as we get a little bit into the Cave Springs, which if you all don't know, Cave Springs is up in Dunsmuir. You can probably paint the vision of future for where you are envisioning it going. It obviously was a huge change for you because it's more, you know, management cabins, mm-hmm. you know, that hospitality, basically like a hotel essentially. So transitioning into that, you know, how has that been for you based on your experience of investing to basically tapping into a whole new world? Like, I guess we will say lessons learned or where you're at with it.
Oh man.
Give us the deets.
Whole new world.
Whole new world.
Yes. I just want to sing that song. I'm not going to. It's bigger numbers, you know, this Cave Springs is complex. It really is. It's, because I'll give you a picture of what it is. So it's a hotel, and then there's 1,500-year-old cabins. And then there's also like a mobile home park. And so when I bought it, there was, you know, probably at least 10 mobile homes that were owned by the owners. And so I wanted to buy those because, you know, I'm like, hey, I want this to be a proper resort, all short term. So, I mean, that was challenging right there, just to try to buy these mm-hmm. Mobile homes from people that love this place.
Yeah.
And one of them was only one that was a full-time residence. And that was the most creative one because we bought a mobile home in a different park, renovated it, and we traded with them. Mm. So that was a kind of a creative way. And then we had another owner that lived in the Bay Area, and we were negotiating, you know, the price and stuff. He was like, sorry, I can't communicate. I can't talk right now. I'm going to space.
Space?
He was going to outer space. Like this guy is that wealthy.
There's an objection I probably wouldn't even know how to handle.
Yeah, but it's so shocking because this is like, you know, a $50,000 trailer.
And you're going to space.
Yeah, and it was really rough. But there's just that scale where, you know, you forget like, wow, like you spend $5,000 over, you know, 60 doors, it adds up. So I think there's just so much I didn't know going into it. And, you know, it's taken longer. It's cost more. It's just that common theme in anything business and real estate that you just have to plan for. Mm-hmm. It's going to take longer. It's going to cost more than you think.
There's a buffer that you're probably not aware of you're going to tap into.
There's just so much you don't know.
Yeah.
And which is great. I mean, that's personally what I want. Like, I want to challenge myself, do hard things, and I got it. I really did it. So part of me is like, it's been stressful in some ways, but you know, I love it. I love the whole, like the branding piece has been really exciting. The whole like creating culture and a brand. And I've learned a lot of that from like other businesses with under Rock Climbing Gym. And I think with this space, it's much easier to kind of grow a following and stuff because it's like, it's so easy to have influencers come and stay, and they post videos of like waterfalls and mountains, and mm-hmm. it's just beautiful. And so people want to share it versus like me trying to grow a personal brand, talking about real estate it's not as natural. It feels more challenging in that way. So
it's like somebody has to relate to you, but if somebody could find their own uniqueness in, you know, Cave Springs and how they see it through their lens and then advertise it, market it, and to whatever platform they're on, influence or just I'm a family going for a vacation and this is a perfect getaway.
Yeah. And it's unique. You know, we have Airstreams, we have these awesome cabins that we renovated and we have this beautiful hotel and it's big. We're right on the river. We have Mount Shasta right there in our view. And so it's just very appealing and it's been around for a long time too. So there's all this history and we've had customers that have been coming for 50 years, like multiple generations.
Yeah.
And so I really didn't know all this about the property. I didn't know all the good stuff that was kind of like this little hidden secret that I didn't know about. And so it actually turned out to be better than I thought.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
And just in the growing pains of it and, you know, biting off something that you really don't have, you know, learning it and challenging yourself. Yeah. What's kind of like the biggest lesson you, if you could go back and start over, somebody was to present Cave Springs back to you again, what's the one thing that you probably would say you would redo? Not as a regret, just as a lesson learned.
Yeah. You know, I tend to be really fast when I do projects because, you know, that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
We're flipping. You got to do it fast because you're paying hard money, carrying costs. I think with a project like this, it's better to slow down, slow down, take your time. You know, I made some mistakes that, you know, cost me close to $1 million, you know, where I was like, I was going to tear down a bunch of old cabins and build new ones. And then in like the fourth quarter, essentially changed and decided to keep them. And so realizing just slowing down, take your time. I think that was something I learned. And then, like I said before, really just plan on it taking longer and really creating a bigger budget. You know, we definitely went over budget. And
as any flip or project.
Oh, yeah. I mean, very few don't go over budget.
Yeah.
And this one just...
It was a sponge.
Whole nother level.
We almost moved to Cave Springs.
Yeah. I'm like, why, if we're moving, we're
kids, you each get your own cabin.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool, I mean, just quick commute from Reading. I mean, it's literally like 40 minutes. I guess it depends on who's driving, but it's like literally like 40 minutes, 40, 50 minutes, just kind of like a getaway. So obviously you've kind of landed into a different investing, which anybody listening would be like, oh my gosh, that's just like, I couldn't even start there. Like, I just want to start with one. What's kind of like your, I know that you do a lot of mentorship and you do a lot of teaching. It might seem like a basic principle, but where do you see most people hang up in starting and investing? And where do you guide most people to once they are not hung up on, hey, I want to invest in real estate or I want to be in real estate? What's kind of like your first initial step that you kind of give people?
I think everyone's first hang up is their mindset.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, can I do this? And it's one, like, I don't have the money or I don't have the credit. And so there's all these like, I felt like mental roadblocks and a lot of them are legitimate. Like I had the same roadblocks. Like I had bad credit. I had no money. I had terrible debt. And then I think once I started like realizing like, oh, it's about the deal. It's about finding, the right property, and then taking risk and taking action. You know, real estate is such a faith journey, you know, where people, or for me, I realized like taking these risks, the risks that I've taken have always been rewarded. It seems like because things just work out. I don't know. Like you just kind of, you realize you're capable of more than what you think. Mm-hmm. We can do hard things. And so I think taking a risk, I think just learning, just getting around people that are doing it and they can help you along the way. I think that's huge. And I've been fortunate to have like my dad, my brother and my father-in-law, people that have been in real estate for a long time. I've been able to like ask them questions and I've been around it too. So it's been pretty comfortable for me to be in that space. But really I think we get in our own way with like, with our mindset of what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hang around people that invest in real estate, like my nephew, he's 23 and he has 10 doors.
Yeah.
You know, and because of me and his dad, like he's hanging around us and he's able to accelerate that journey so much faster because of who he knows.
Yeah. It's like the people you put around, it's like, it makes you dream bigger. I think when we actually started real estate, it was like, we weren't in coaching or anything like that. And I was like, man, we're like the bee's knees. Like we sell X, Y, and Z houses. Like we're so great.
Yeah.
And then I remember at the conference, this person stood up and he's like, yeah, I sell 700 homes. And I'm like, you sell what? Like, and it was just like this, like, whoa. Okay. I look like a small fish in this pond. Like, how do we like scale, do bigger, do more? And like, what's my threshold of like how I can R&D or yeah. follow in your footsteps, so it becomes more of a reality versus like a passion project.
Yeah. That's why masterminds are so great. Like, I'm yeah. sure you do those things, and being around those people are great. It's that tension. I'm like, would you rather be a small fish in a big pond, or would you rather be a big fish in a small pond? Mm-hmm. Like, where are you at on that?
I would rather, it's funny, as I don't like to overcrowd a pond. Like, I would rather be somebody in like, I think it's just more of like, as you get more comfortable with what you can accomplish, you feel like you have a voice. And so yeah. it's like in the journey of us growing in our business, it's kind of for a while, I'm like, can I do this? Like, I'd always tell people, like, I'm like, I think I just had a really good year. Like, I don't know yeah. if I can do this next year. And then you learn like, oh wow, I've actually been putting seeds in place for a very long time. Social media, we didn't get any return of investment for that for like years. And now it's like, okay, like people recognize us based on that. So it's like in the beginning, you kind of just start out and you're like, am I like, can I do it? And then you kind of learn your lane that you excel in. And yeah. it's like, now if I want to become a bigger fish, where this sounds like a really weird analogy, but I'm like, if I want to become a bigger fish, like what do I want to add that like I'm lacking in? Is it systems? Is it operation? Yeah. Is it creativity or whatnot to actually be able to be a well-rounded fish? I don't know how I got on this right. fish topic, but
no, one thing you just said, I think it's really interesting. Someone, I was talking to a guy that owns this, like he owns big companies, right? Like 600 employees. He like owned a jet. And he was telling me about like deal hunting, and you know, this is a big deal for you guys with just lead flow, right? Mm. And he talked about how like he was always hunting deals, and then he realized like actually hunting wasn't that, wasn't the best use of his time. He was like, actually farming is better. And I think that's what you do really well. And that's just planting seeds, like with your social media. It's like, you're just planting seeds all the time, like helping people, connecting. And then what happens is the deals come to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a more like,
that's an authentic way.
Yeah, it's strategic. Yeah.
It's strategic, and I think it's just more authentic, because then like I tell people, like I stay top of mind, and it's like at the end of the day, like it's, you think of anything, business, local businesses. Oh, Faith always highlights this. Yeah. Like I should go to her for X, Y, and Z. Yeah. So, yeah, it's always, it's been a journey, and it's been fun, obviously being on social media, watching all the things that you've accomplished. So kudos to you for, you know, stepping into something that's out of your comfort zone and kind of being vulnerable with it for people that are like, oh, Ben's got it all figured out. And it's like, my case rings is a picture of, I don't know everything that I'm doing, but we'll figure it out and be, yes. you know, vulnerable with it. And yeah, I think the person that, you know, like yourself, asks the questions, thinks bigger, does more, like you just keep a more open perspective of being able to actually move your needle forward versus like, oh, I've been doing this for X amount of years. I know exactly what I'm doing, you know, so.
It's very humbling, you know, I don't have any space to like critique others.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I've been there. I've been criticized for things, and it's like, you know, it's easy to judge other people. And then when you realize like you're out there doing something, it just reminds me of just the man in the arena is like one of my favorite quotes. And I'm like, man, that's like who I want to be. I want to be the one out there on the field, sweating, failing, trying hard to bring change and make things better. And mm-hmm. I think if you're out there playing the game, then you have no room to critique. It's the spectators that are the ones that are like, man, you should be doing that better or differently. And you're like, yeah, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Moving on.
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate you stepping in, kind of sharing your, you know, small wealth of knowledge in, you know, 30 minutes, because I know that you have probably so much more to share, but it's been really cool, like I said, to see your journey. So if you are in our area and obviously want a quick getaway, Cape Springs up in Dunsmuir is a great place just to reset for sure. And then where can people find you if they have more questions? Are you still doing mentorship or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm still doing mentorship. So just Benjamin Goodpasture on Instagram. Goodpasturehomes.com. You can go on there and join our wait list, get on the next mentorship program I'm going to do one this fall. So I still want to do that. I love helping people. I love seeing people succeed and get in the game. But yeah, I'd say that and Cape Springs are kind of like my two
places
right
you can find Ben Goodpasture. So,
yep.
Well, thank you so much again. And we'll catch you on next week's episode.
Sweet. Thanks for having me.